The following was recorded at Web Direction South in Sydney on October the 15th, 2010. For more materials from this conference series, please visit webdirections.org. This podcast is licensed to you under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Please include this audio license notice with any copy or derivative work of the podcast that you distribute. Welcome to Simon Pascal Klein's presentation, Setting Standards Friendly Web Type.
So I'll do a quick run-through of the presentation today. There is heaps of content. The number of slides I will not divulge to you because it's going to be almost frightening. I've split the talk into two sections, one on primarily the stuff that I wanted to cover, which has also been advertised, and then an extension of stuff that I can look at if we have time, if you're interested. I know some of you guys might want to, like, you know, find yourself reading over, you know, listening, so there's a lot of text to read as well. So if you want, don't pay attention to the text and just listen. If you want, just read and pay less attention to what I'm saying, whatever works. And the upside of this is I will put up the slides later on as a PDF, and you can grab them and use them as a reference resource. So I hope that hopefully kind of hits the nail as many times as possible for as many different people as possible. So I'll get straight into it. Setting standards-friendly web type. So we're going to be setting type on the web in a standards-friendly way and hopefully make it look pretty. The tagline that was put up was the art of technological typography. My Twitter handle's there as well. My real name is, full name is Simon Pascal Klein, but just call me Pascal, whatever works. So I'll just quickly just do a, I'll run through this really quickly. I'm one of those BA students, do graphic web design, and incurably a bit of a typophile. Basically that means that I'm an uber geek about type that just really gives, like, some people like, you know, wine or cheese. This is the thing that really does it for me. So anyone else out there who's has a similar passion? Sweet, I'm not alone. Awesome. So I'll go through next a definition, because that's the way I like to start things. Basically, typography is pretty damn simple. It's basically just about setting the text that you're working with and honoring it for the purpose of what you've designed it for. So for example, if you're working with a comic, you probably want to not set it in, you know, a book typeface. If you're working with a novel, you want to make it a pleasure to read, you know, so you can do, so you can, it can be an actual page turner novel. Again, as I mentioned, the talk is separated into two halves. First half is getting a typeface onto the web, and the second half is setting that type and making it all pretty. So let's begin with one. So first off, why would we want to even bother doing this? Well, I like to work off a pretty simple premise. This has also appeared in previous renditions of this talk, and I think that everyone will probably agree with this. The internet is really heavily saturated with information. A lot of it is textual, and a lot of it is a pain to read. There's a lot of video content out there, there's a lot of image content out there, but the stuff we work with on a daily basis, you know, to perform tasks, much of it is still textual, and will probably continue to be. So basically, typography applies to this in such a way that it brings aesthetic order to it. We can organize information and make it easier for users to find, navigate, and read. And this has been mirrored by the fact that there's a renewed interest in typography over the last few years. People have found that it's central to aesthetics, it's central to accessibility and legibility. Many of the sort of really finer typesetting techniques that have come out on some of the, you know, graphic design websites and some of the journals, and a lot of graphic designers themselves use for their own websites, you know, are praised for their ingenuity. And we've also recently had a growing availability of web fonts, which has also really sparked this interest again. And basically the bottom line is it makes stuff look pretty. Or in more academic terms, basically web experiences that feature good typography are just easier and more pleasurable to use. So let's cover a few assumptions about web typography. It sucks, it's boring, you can only use sans serif because you're working with a digital display and you can't use, you know, you're not working in print, so you've got to put yourself onto a pixel grid. You can only use the WebSafe fonts. You've got limited control. If you want to do really fancy stuff, you need to use proprietary technology to do it. And there are so many options, and I'm stuck. How do I continue? What do I do now? How do I do it? So this main talk aims to fix that last step the most. Thankfully, of course, this is all not quite true. Hooray. So there are, of course, some possible pitfalls and problems that are actually true, which we should consider. The first one is that more fonts does not necessitate instant good typography. Many of the new fonts that are available are not even designed for web use. They're designed originally for print, which raises a whole bunch of issues when we work on the web. Use the right tool for the right medium. There's a growing availability of web fonts, which is part of this problem. There are differences in implementation, and there's this big struggle between open and closed implementations and technologies that are available. And finally, subsetting and compression, which I'll cover later on, become your responsibility if you're not using a provider, so if you're doing it all yourself. So how do we go about bringing good type onto the web? There are a range of options available. They vary in different complexities. They vary in different stylistic versatilities. They're standards-based, at least the ones that you can use now. And yes, of course, you can access them right now, and they're out there and available and have widespread browser support, which is good. So let's cover the options that you have if you want to get type onto the web. The first one, which is probably the most common and traditionally used, and the fallback at all times, is the installed fonts that come on a user agent. So your Mac or your PC will come with a bunch of fonts, and in your website CSS, you'll declare that you want to use that font, which references it, and the browser renders the text that's available from the font file data that's on the computer. And the way it does this, or the way that this system works, is that there's a set of fonts that are so widespread in use, a set of standard fonts, the web core fonts as they're known, and everyone's got them, so you can always use them, which won't be a problem. Then there's Flash and Flash replacement and other JavaScript technologies. There's KuFon, which came out about a year and a half, 2 years ago. There's the EOT Lite implementation from Microsoft via the @FontFace web font declaration. Then there's the web font implementation. Next up, we have WAF. I'll cover all of these in detail, by the way. We have SVG fonts. We have hosting and licensing services. And let's get into the first one, installed and web-safe fonts. So really, really simple stuff. I think that if you've worked with the web before, this will be pretty basic to you. You know, you declare your font family, you've got your preferred at the front, you know, the one that you want the most, and then you've got a list of fallbacks that'll cycle through until it finds the one that it actually has. So these are the two examples here that you can use. One's for serif, you've got Baskerville at the front. If it doesn't find Baskerville in your system, it resorts to Times. If it doesn't have Times in your system, it resorts to Times New Roman, and thereon. And the same thing for the sans serif declaration at the bottom. So, font stacks. As I said, pretty simple. Desired, the fallbacks, and then the generic, which is just a generic declaration, which the system will have a default for that it'll switch to. Next up, CIFO and other JavaScript replacements. So basically these work in that they grab a Flash file, and they work with JavaScript to replace the text in the Flash file over text that you have on the web page. It's not really a feasible solution. In other words, please don't use it now. There are better technologies. The nice thing about it is it does subsetting. So I mentioned I was going to explain this. Subsetting essentially is you're cutting out the glyphs, the characters that you don't need in your font file. So for example, if you have a font file that has Hebrew, Arabic, Greek letters, the various mathematical symbols, fraction signs, the whole shebang, everything that you need if you want to do a big publication, like it's like a book piece of work, which you will not ever need if you're doing web work. For example, if you don't find yourself ever using Greek characters on your website, then there's no reason to include them in the font data and force the user to download that data. It's excess waste, it's extra kilobytes, and adds to your page load size. So the nice thing about this is you can do subsetting with this, so it reduces that file size. It's non-standard, relies on Flash and JavaScript, and usually these files will be larger, so you'll have this flash of unstyled text called fount, where the browser will load the text, and then there'll be this flash where it transforms it into beautiful stylized text. So there's performance issues as well, because it uses Flash, so it's not really feasible for any larger lengths of text. You can only really use it for headings. Then come KuFon and the JavaScript, other JavaScript implementations. Basically, these used converted font files to VML paths and rendered them using the canvas element and JSON. There's a couple of concerns. It's not really accessible. You can't really select the text that well, so it's an issue for accessibility. It works in most browsers, which is a good thing, which is why this sort of really was very interesting to people who had only worked with Flash stuff at the start. Type Foundries were very skeptical. Type Foundries, their entire business model is predicated on the idea that their font files will be safe, that you will buy them, you can't share them, to some degree DRM is used, and that this data that you've paid for this font file is for you and you only. And if you're going to try and render text on the web, someone might be able to download it and reverse engineer the font file, and there goes 390 euros of whatever that font family was cost them or what they charged for. So font foundries were very skeptical of this service. And the converter is often proprietary. Next came Microsoft implementation. This used the web fonts W3C standard with a proprietary format. It's been described as DRM icing on an open type cake. It basically takes your open type font formats that we've worked with for ages on the desktop, and makes them web ready. It encrypts them. It's not really feasible because it's non-standard, it's a proprietary solution, and it's only supported in Internet Explorer. It requires a proprietary converter, WEFT, to use to create the EOT files, and it was rejected by the W3C on account of the proprietary converters and the proprietary encryption and compressing technology that they used. Next up came OTTTF. This came out about a year and a half ago in Firefox. It's been since supported in a range of other great browsers. This is probably one of the technologies you'll work the most with that also the web font hosting services will utilize. It's feasible, but the files can still be downloaded. All you need to do is open up the CSS. You'll jump to the font file declaration. You just look for the at font face declaration. You grab the source. You can download it, and you've got the font file. So the foundries were still not very happy with this. It has quite widespread support, however. Predominantly, this was encouraged through freely licensed fonts that people could actually use, and it's been fairly well respected. I haven't seen many foundries deal with pirated web fonts myself. I'm sure it's been happening, but thankfully, this technology has been pushed by freely licensed fonts. So it's got, as you can see, it's got fairly widespread support. Internet Explorer 9 development version currently supports it, which is great. Android supports it. The only operating system there that really, or the only browsing platform that's not on there at the moment is iOS, sadly. Subsetting and compression comes down to you. So if you want to host these font files on your computer, on your web server and prettify your web page, you need to do the subsetting and the compression. So this is an example of a web page entirely done in CSS and font at FontFace using OpenType, freely available subsetted fonts. All the characters that were not used there have been removed from the font, so what you're downloading is actually quite small. All of this is text. You can select the whole thing, and it's quite pretty. And now we're up to WAF, which is basically where we're at now, and probably the most recommended implementation that you use. It works just like OTTTF. It uses the at font face web font system, and basically it's a new file format that was developed for web fonts specifically. It's the web open font file. It's essentially compressed SFNT font data, so an OpenType TrueType font that's been mixed with a bunch of XML files of metadata. You know, this is the license, this is the vendor, this is the type designer. You can get it from this website, that kind of stuff. And it's just a bundle, compressed, everything ready to go, and you build it using this tool called SFNT 2WAF. And there's a couple of tools I'll cover later on how to make these files really easy. Good things about it being just awesome. CORS is available via HTTP response editors. So CORS is cross-object resource sharing. So within the HTTP headers of your website, you can declare that this resource cannot be used on another website, on another domain. So the font data that I'm making available for you on my web page cannot be linked to, like an image, and used on another web page for this domain only, essentially, which is what Type Foundries were really wanting, because they wanted to sell these fonts, but not have someone download them and instantly use them on their website as well. The font data can still be extracted. I mean, it's an open source tool to create the data. It's an open specification, but there's effort involved, and you know, unless you're a script kiddie or something, you probably won't be bothered to do it. You need to have some technical expertise. So it's not as simple as just opening up the CSS and grabbing it and downloading it and then opening it up in InDesign or Photoshop and being able to use the font data. It's also got great support. Internet Explorer 9 is development version supporting, which is awesome. WebKit's been supporting it for ages in the development build, so it's come out in Chrome, and Safari, future versions of Safari will also support it, and Firefox 3.6 Plus is supporting it as well. Again, subsetting and compression comes down to the author. This is to some extent handled automatically by the converter tool. We have SVG as well, which is handled just like the other font files. It also uses web fonts. I'll run through this quickly because it's pretty basic. You can download the font files. You can convert them back into OTF, TTF files quite easily, so there's that issue again. It's got reasonably good support, including in iOS, which is interesting. And again, subsetting and compression comes down to you. And finally, probably the most interesting to you guys who don't want to deal with a lot of code, want to get a pretty typeface on your web page quickly, you use a hosting and licensing service. So these have really furthered this discussion and this interest. So actually, the ones that I've listed here, Typekit, Kernis, there's a couple others that I'll run through later on. So generally, these are foundry initiatives, so people who create fonts, type foundries. They basically realize that there are people out there that want to implement their fonts on the web, and we have a business model for that. We want to secure our assets because it's our intellectual property. I mean, I suppose rightfully so. And not exclusively all paid for. Some are free. Some are restricted versions or sort of trial versions that you can use. So basically the way it works is you pay, you select your font, you pay for it, you select a subscription model, you grab their one line of code, you stick it onto your web page, you reload, and you're done. Thoughts about this? It's deemed the solution because it involves the type foundries. They're making money off it. You have a massive selection of typefaces which you can use, which is great. It's standards-based, largely. It has great browser support. For older browsers, the system will automatically realize that you're using an older version of IE and will automatically create on-the-fly EOT files for you. It's easy. Subsetting compression is done server-side by them for you. You don't have to handle any of it. It's in their own interest to reduce their bandwidth anyway, so they do it all themselves. So this is some examples. This is the front page of the Typekit website. Everything except for the logos here on the right and this screenshot here is all text, essentially. So you can select that the easiest way to use real web fonts on the website. That is just plain text rendered using OpenType web fonts. This is an example of using Typekit. This is the typeface Scholar, so you can use a sample of it, and then you can use your own text. You can read about the author. This screenshot's a bit dated, so I'm not sure if it's changed a whole lot. But basically, you enter the website, you make an account, you put in your credit card details, you go through your library, you select what you want, you pay for it on a monthly basis or whatever subscription models that they have available, and you grab their code, stick it in your web page, reload, done. Another example of their service. This is a page with actively uses web fonts from Typekit. So you can see here, all of this is basically just text, except for that photo there. The rest is just plain CSS styling and a slightly fancy ornamental background, but everything else is just plain text. Again, this Pixels Creativity and Lorem Ipsum, it's selectable. It's accessible. It's all plain text. This is FontDeck, another licensing service-side service that's come out recently. This is their front page. So there's a range of services to choose and use from. They all have different... Some of their libraries of fonts that are available overlap because they'll make deals with other foundries. Sometimes it'll be one foundry by themselves and only their fonts. Oops. This is Typotech in the Netherlands, a really established type foundry, and this is their front page website. And they also do web fonts these days, very cheap. So this is the way they work. You grab the price calculator, you select the font you want. At the style you want, you can choose all styles or just one style. You obviously pay less for one style. You select the user, the license, calculate, bang. And it's an €18 one-off fee. That's it. You don't pay anything else. So different services have different licensing and payment plans. This is an example of just pure text. Everything here is text. It's all selectable, including the Cyrillic, the Greek, the Latin, and the Arabic down the bottom. Everything's pure plain text, which is easy to select, accessible, scales up and down when you increase and decrease font size on the web page. Again, all just plain text with one or two graphics. There's a filler here and there. You can make beautiful newspaper outlines like this. This is the Typotech. This is actually a dated version of their website, but it runs through their service. This is the way it worked again. You just either the full license or a trial web license, or you can grab both nowadays as well for a reduced price, apparently. You select what you want. You create a project, which is just linked to a domain that you've set up. You go through and you select the styles that you like, whether or not you want to have bold or not bold available. If you don't want bold or don't choose to ever use bold, like, for example, you're only using it for a specific type of heading, then you can remove those glyphs, which cuts down the file size again. This is just me testing around with one of my web pages, applying their web fonts. Even that W there is just plain text. There's not a single image on this page at the moment. So, how to apply and use that font face via code? First off, I recommend you reset. All the different user agents, all the different browsers have default styling for their for HTML and XHTML. This can cause an issue when you want to, you know, really get to the nuts and bolts of things, because the default styling may override and your stuff will look different in different browsers. This makes it a real pain for that consistency. So you grab a reset style sheet, which kind of gives you a blank slate. A lot of the frameworks, the CSS frameworks that you can grab these days, have this. This one's from the Yahoo YUI library. I think Google Blueprint has got one as well. So just Google for it, and you'll find heaps of them. So basically, it just grabs all the elements that are available in XML and XHTML, and will reset them for you. So bulletproof font declarations. Start off with add font face. This is just plain CSS. You put your font family in, and you name it whatever you want, your typeface. Then you put, first up, your EOT file. Internet Explorer is picky, and it wants its file first. If you don't give it first, it flips up, and it won't render. Even if you list it later on, it's just particular about that. So your first source declaration of the first font file that you want to reference is your EOT file for Internet Explorer. The next one is you put in a local source. This is interesting that Internet Explorer wants to be for a local source. So just imagine you have a typeface that you want your website to use, but you know that some users might actually have that already. So you put in a local source declaration. And basically this says, hey, just by chance, if you have this, don't bother downloading it from me. You've got it already. Just use that. You save yourself data. So you put in two types of names. I'll cover that as well. Then comes your WAF file, which I recommend you should use nowadays. You put in your OTF file. And remember, a browser will only grab one of these, except for Internet Explorer, which grabs them all for some reason, even though it can't pass half of them. So you need to, you don't actually run any negative, there's no downsides to making different file versions of your font available, because different browsers will want to grab a different version. Then comes your SVG, and you put IDs in it because it's basically XML, and you want to reference which ID the font starts in. And that's it. The only pitfall here is, and I've noticed this quite quickly and then realized why my things were so ugly, is that you're essentially dealing with different font files for different styles of that typeface. So you'll have a something rather regular, which is your Roman, right? Then you'll have your italic. Then you'll have your bold and your small caps and your bold italic, and they're actually all separate files. Now, the problem that happens with this is become an issue when you use things like elements which have default styling to them, like the strong element or the EM element, the emphasis element, which are styled by default as bold and italic. So what the browser then does is if we declare via at font face that we want to get this style, this typeface, you know, we want to make italic into the design, and we want to apply it to elements that we say to be bold or elements that we want to be italic, it'll doubly apply that styling. Once it'll take the default text, like the style that you've taken, the font file, and then it'll computerize and make a fake italic on top of that, which is really, really ugly and can become an issue. So the result here, for example, I suppose I should have taken the true italic, but basically it grabs your text and then the computer on the fly makes it even more italic or makes it even smaller as a small capital. So you see the sage and the UK small capitals, it makes them doubly small. So you get all these really disgusting sort of eyesores on your page. The way to avoid that is you need to basically override the various declarations. But if you do that, globally, then imagine if your font file wasn't selected. then bold wouldn't ever be applied. So if your font file for foobar-bold is not downloaded or not available for that browser, and you've said, don't make this bold because it's already bold, then whatever fallback you're using won't actually be bold either. So you overcome this by putting in your style declaration in the at fontface declaration, and basically it just slots in right there. So if you're working with an italic version of your typeface, which you've declared, you need to say, by the way, this is my italic, and don't doubly italicize it. Why are there two entries for the local source? Some browsers refer to PostScript names, others don't. This can just become an issue. It's a bit of just an annoyance that we have to deal with. Finding your PostScript name under different operating systems in Fontbook, you can find it here. If you go to the information tab when you select a font file, you've got the PostScript name and the full name. Your full name is your generic, and then you put in the PostScript name, which is the Georgia hyphen italic. There's a free downloadable web fonts property application extension for Windows, and you just right-click on a font file and go to Properties, and then you see the Names tab. And there's there's the link, by the way. And remember, these slides are all available, and there are similar tools for free desktops. When you're using at Fontface for self-hosted websites, you need to subset and compress yourself. This is in your own interest because you want to reduce bandwidth and you want to make sure that the page loads as fast as possible for your users. So subsetting allows us to remove unused glyphs that we're not ever going to use. So if you know you don't ever, if you know you won't ever use Greek and it's in your font file, you might as well get rid of it because otherwise they're downloading superfluous data. And you can do it in a font editor. There's a free one called FontForge. It's open source. Grab it. You open up your font file. You select your unused glyphs and you delete them and you hit save. Simple as that. Make sure you keep, obviously, an original copy in case you ever decide to you need those extra glyphs. But otherwise, yeah, nice and easy. You can save yourself the headache, skip using the Microsoft's EOTL encryption tool and use the open source version instead. Why do you want to do this? Because it's a proprietary format and the gzip algorithm compresses far better than the monotype's proprietary compressor that's used in the in Microsoft's tool, so gzip will give you a better compression result. It only works with Windows XP. I put a question mark there because that was as of a year ago, and I went browsing last night on Microsoft website with nothing, not a single piece of information on whether it works on Vista. And seemingly people have had problems. And there's also issues in trying to run it under emulation. So if you try to run Windows emulated on a Mac and then execute the tool, it has problems because the font daemon isn't running in the environment it wants to for some reason. So all bizarre. So save yourself that headache and just do it using the open source tool. And there are website front ends to this tool where you just upload your file, you go through the UI, and it does it for you. You don't have to use a command line or anything. The TTF to EOT converter doesn't compress, so just use gzip on your server. There are online front ends to these. I'll link two here. There's one here. This is just for TTF to EOT. And there's a second one which does everything, which is great. This is an example of that converter. You know, you click add your fonts, you browse your hard drive, you grab the font you want. You can go easy or expert. It automatically creates a whole bunch of different font files for you, including a gzip version of SVG. You can do add hinting, remove kerning, everything you want to do. So basically, use that. It's awesome. For compression, this is about as technical as this talk will get. We'll move on to fun stuff shortly. This is just in HTA access files. Basically, you want to add a couple of lines. You want to make sure that you reference OTF and EOT. WAF will be added shortly, or should already be added. And then you need to add a special line for Windows that you're actually saying EOT is a proprietary file. Please make sure you keep it in mind. And you add that. And basically, that tells the server to automatically compress those files for browsers that support the compression. And yeah, that line there. And you can get awesome compression results. So it's really, really worth doing, especially if you're, you know, serving lots and lots of users. And you can cache the font assets too. Basically, once they've downloaded it, for people who come back to your web page, there's no point in them downloading the font file again. So cache it. Tell them to, you know, keep it in the browser cache. Really simple to do again. It's just that line there. And you give it a good age, you know, don't expire for a couple of months kind of thing. And that's it. I suppose the other question in this segment, at least for the talk, is where can you find the fonts that you want to put on the web? The answer is, this is just for free fonts. Obviously, I don't want to really endorse one service provider. So these are freely licensed fonts, which you can use on your web page without paying anything whatsoever. There's the Open Font Library, which is awesome. You can use it for desktop publishing. You can use it on the web. You can use it for anything you want. It's really, really good stuff. There's the League of Movable Type, which is basically a bunch of typographers who've come together and basically want to make free fonts for the world. Sorry, not typographers, type designers. There's Font Squirrel, and they have a whole list of freely available fonts as well. And then there's a list on the webfonts.info, which is basically just a wiki site of information about web fonts. And remember this, you can grab the slides later on as well. So if anyone's writing that down, I'll move on. So, I want to stop now briefly because time is slowly running out, and this is the second part of the talk, and there's still a fair bit to go. And remember, you can grab all this later on. I've covered the material I really wanted to cover. Are there any big questions that you want answered for the first part of the talk? Anyone? Yep. The bulletproof. Smiley fix?
Yeah, I noticed it's on the font generator. So, I read somewhere on one of the font face websites that you use a smiley character so the browser doesn't actually try and load your local font because sometimes there are issues.
Okay. I haven't had any experience with that.
Okay. It's on the font screw generator, yeah.
Okay. I've never had any issue with that. I've set stuff myself using OTF and TTF and WAF, and I've used three or four of the font hosting and licensing services. I haven't run into the issue, but I can chase it up for you. I'd be interested to see what the actual problem is. Yeah. Cool. Grab me up at the end. Anyone else? Questions, thoughts, concerns?
Yeah, just with the local font names, the chances of getting a like-named font and a potential collision there where it's essentially pulling a font from the user's machine that has the same name. Do you know what they do to try and work around that so they're not getting a rendered page that actually might have a similarly named font but has, no visual likeness?
It's thus far not been an issue because most font names are fairly lengthy, and because you've got to remember the italic comes in as well, like the different sub-styles that are available for that font. And even like super families, like really large families that have one name and have a whole range of different styles, like Meta, for example, from FontFont, it's a super family with like 100 plus styles. It's huge. And that has, a sans serif, a serif, a whole range of different styles, and they're very particular about the naming sequence. It's never been an issue that any type designers have had a problem with before, really, that I've heard of. Anyone who's been setting type on the web has never raised it as a concern. I could see it as a possible conflict, but I guess if you wanted to not write fully standardized code, if that was a real issue for you, then you could leave that line out and just be like, don't ever try to search on your local machine. I mean, the browser's not going to flip over it. I don't see it to be a big problem. But if it is, like if you find that to be an issue on any of your on any of the clients that are accessing the site, then yeah, just remove that line. If that happens to be the case, I'd be very surprised if it would be.
Great talk so far. I just wanted to ask about, I guess, corporate use of this for existing brands and websites where they have a corporate style guide and a corporate font.
Yep.
I guess, how available are these fonts that might be in use by a big organization, and what would they expect to pay, and how does the licensing work for some of these fonts? And then the next part of that is, when do you think this will be, the browser support, when do you think that will be broad enough that, the mainstream corporate style large websites will start implementing this kind of stuff?
Yep. So, to answer your question, companies that are really interested and really passionate about and very particular about their branding, particularly their typefaces, will have either already endeavored to try and get the typeface they use in print onto the web, generally as images. They'll be very easy to sway to using this. Others, those who, basically companies who will care about their branding, will probably be likely to switch quite easy. Others will think, all right, I either pay like a one-off fee of $50 or a monthly fee of $5, and that's it. It depends on how much money they have in their pockets and how interested they are in their branding. As for Reddit, like the Reddit, like whether or not it's ready for them to use, I think it's fairly ready at the moment because the different web font services provide fallbacks for all the different browsers, including down to IE6. And this is not a worry for you whatsoever. You basically go, you introduce them to this thing, there's no technical side, you don't even have to show them the code example page, it's just a separate tab that's hidden for you as a developer. You can be like, hey, this is the typeface you're currently using in print. Hey, look, it's available on the web, and you know it's a one-off fee, or it's this fee, or you know you've already paid for this, and you've paid a lot of money for this. Most font foundries have Typotec, for example. Anyone who's ever bought a font off them for print, you know, paid 390 euros and got a font family for print, has access to web fonts automatically. Yeah. So, for example, they're a service that just goes, you've paid for it once, go for it. We're on Amazon EC2. This is costing us such a small amount. It's free publicity for us in one form or another because people look at the website and go, wow, that's something different. And technically, really, if you're using a licensing, like a hosting service, it's not a problem at the moment because you don't deal with any of the fallbacks. You don't have to worry about does it work in this browser or does it not because they manage all that themselves. It's in their own interest. And it's only going to get better because IE9 will support WAF, which will basically mean we can just go down to one file and that's it. Yeah. So, bright future, which is good. Yes?
I've been using Typekit on quite a few websites.
Yep.
And I had some problems with the rendering of different types on different IE versions. Mm-hmm. Can you just quickly comment on if there's anything that can be done within that JavaScript solution to actually improve the type rendering? And because you mentioned the fallback on different browsers, which you know exists, but it's not very optimal in most IE versions up to, I think, IE9. Mm-hmm. Just quickly comment on that.
I think most of the rendering issues will come down to hinting. Just to cover quickly hinting. Hinting essentially is we're now applying a vector line-based character, you know, with curves and in its shape, to a grid-based pixel LCD screen, and we need to ensure that certain lines, certain parts of the character will never get blurred through anti-aliasing. So basically hinting suggests that on, for example, the letter N, that the two sides, the two stems of the N, the vertical stems of the N, will never get blurred because it makes it very indistinguishable. So that's hinting, hinting tables. That basically it grabs a glyph and says that these boxes that fall within the glyph, the character, should never ever get blurred. And usually it's, you know, the diagonals and a couple of the horizontals. So you might want to look at hinting tables, and different fonts have different hinting tables because hinting can be auto-done. Like a computer can run through a font and be like, I want to make sure that this stuff shouldn't get ever blurred. But good typefaces and good fonts are manually hinted. Generally, a type foundry, when they produce a font for screen use, will auto-hint the entire typeface, and then a human has to go over it and correct and make additions and subtractions to the hinting tables. So good typefaces will have awesome hinting. Typefaces that are rushed or put out there, or just the developer or the type designer didn't have enough time, will not have the greatest of hinting. So that could be one of the issues. So that's aside from JavaScript, anything to do with the JavaScript. The other concern would be the rendering options that are set for Internet Explorer on Windows. You can clear type, in my humble opinion, personally, isn't as good as some of the other rendering engines that are out there for rendering type on screen. You can customize clear type to improve, depending on how you like things, the rendering. On the JavaScript side, I can't comment because I don't know much about the really heavy technical back end of this. But I think your first two avenues of possibly improving typeface rendering on IE would be to look at the hinting of the typeface. And you can test that by looking at it on different screens and in different browsers and on different operating systems and seeing if there are really big differences and if there's any patterns, and otherwise look at tweaking the browser's options. It's probably not the answer you wanted to hear. I mean, I really apologize. I don't know much about the heavy backend stuff, but I'm sure Typekit, if you approach them, I've asked them questions before when I was unsure about stuff, and they're pretty quick to answer. So just give them a nudge on Twitter or something. Yeah. I think we're fast running out of time. Are we? No? Awesome, cool. So, anyway, more questions, or should I continue? Continue? Cool. We probably won't get through all of this. This is kind of like a teaser. Now you've got your web font that you selected. You know, it might be one of the defaults. It might be, you know, something pretty you selected via a font hosting and licensing service. Or you might have, you know, grabbed the font that you've yourself created or a freely licensed font, and now you want to style that on your web page. So, let's get into it. Meanwhile, web fonts aren't the holy grail of good web typography. Typography is not picking a cool font. This is Jeff Croft. And remember that most of the fonts that are made, that have been made in the world have been made for print use, not for web use. So they're optimized for print use, they haven't been properly hinted, that sort of stuff. So we've got our selected desired font, and now we want to make it look really pretty. I'll just quickly run through some of the options that you've got, because this is now more on the stylistic aesthetic side of things. So you've got serif, you have sans serif, so sans without serif, so without the little feet and little tails and tags. We've got script typefaces, so this comes from handwriting. We have black letter, which is traditional handwriting, which were the first Latin books ever printed in. In fact, Gutenberg's 42-line Bible was printed in black letter. People used to write with quill pens, and this was the handmade type that they wrote back then. And we have monospace. There's a couple of others, but like, for example, cursive and fantasy that have been added as defaults, but I won't cover them because they're pretty much all fall within these categories anyway. Monospace is essentially every character occupies exactly the same amount of vertical space. Horizontal space, what am I saying? So it's great for working with consoles on your computer or things that have to be always, you know, one width. If you're working with tabular data, for example, you want your decimal points to line up in your table. You don't want them ever to separate and move apart. You know, if numbers change, if things go from an 8 to a 9 and suddenly the decimal point is half a spot over, it makes it hard for the eye to follow the table. These are the defaults. These are sort of the web core web safe fonts. There's a couple of others, but I've removed them. I hope maybe some of you know which ones I've removed. Don't ever use them because they're crap. These are the ones that are basically out there. They sound really boring, but you can do pretty cool stuff with them, surprisingly. Basically, the first recommendation is use a limited paletta families. Don't go overboard. A common effective technique is to pair a sans serif with a serif. So, for example, one could be for headings. So you might use, Arial or Vardana for headings, and you might use Times New Roman for your body copy, or the other way around. One set for body, one set for headings. You might do one set's primary content, and one set's the user interface controls, if you're working with a web app, for example. And we control this using the very old, very awesome font face property in CSS. And you can breathe a lot of fresh air into your web typography by just combining different things in tasteful manners. Font weight controls your weight, the thickness, basically, of the font. It accepts numerical and descriptive values, so, for example, e.g. normal or e.g. bold. Font style controls the style, so it accepts things like normal, italic, oblique, so on. And font variant basically controls the case, whether or not you're using normal case or small capitals. So this is an example of the different. This is basically just normal. This is Roman type, Roman serif type. Next we have italic, which is not the same as oblique. Oblique is a computerized italic. And remember, this is the problem we had earlier when we selected a custom italic typeface from a web hosting service or one that you've uploaded yourself, and then you want to make sure that you don't doubly set that as italic, because it'll take the italic and slant it again, which will look really ugly. And next we have different weights. So for example, ultralight, this is Helvetica ultralight, Helvetica regular, and Helvetica bold. And then you can mix and match and squash them together. Obviously, you need to use typefaces that have had this done for you. You don't want to computerize this stuff on the fly, because it's generally going to look ugly. So this is a bold italic condensed version of Minion Pro. And then finally, we have small capitals. And I'll cover that shortly. Tracking comes next, which is basically spacing, additional spacing, not kerning, it's additional spacing that a type setter, as in yourself who's setting type, would add between the characters. In the technical jargon, it's called letter spacing. And where would you possibly use this? It actually comes into use. It might not seem very interesting here. I mean, sometimes you might want to add different loose word spacing as an additional space between words. But none of that's really interesting. But for example, one trend that's quite popular is setting a bold Helvetica or a bold Arial and adding slightly negative tracking, which is squashing it together. This is like a really popular trend you might have seen on the web in the last like year or so. So that's one example of applying tracking. But it also helps in other things. It helps differentiate and make things more legible and removes disruption. So an example of this would be setting acronyms or tabular data. So let's go through acronyms. So full letter acronyms, if they're all full capital size, will come out almost as eyesores. I hope this is fairly legible. So you've got NASA and you've got HTML in here, and they kind of stick out for you. Next up, and we have 4962 as a number. And you can see that the number here, all the numbers are uniform in height and match the X height, so from the baseline, which is the bottom of the M, to the height of smaller characters that don't have ascenders. So for example, it's called the X height because a lowercase x doesn't have an ascender or a descender. It doesn't extend below the baseline, which is where all the letters sit on, and it doesn't extend like an L or a H or a K does, for example. So they're all uniform in height. What you want to do, ideally, is you want to set them in small capitals because it's less of an eyesore. But with numbers, this is tabular data. Like, you want to set stuff like this as tabular data, but when you're working within text, your numbers should ideally dip up and below the baseline and the X height, just like letters should. If you get presented with a page of this, like a book, it's all fluid text, it's a nice big block, and you've got these big, you know, acronyms sticking out, they actually become, you can really notice them. Like, you look at the page and go, there's an acronym there, there, and there, and there. So, ideally, you want to turn them into small capitals. So, that's the example of the changes. Letter spacing and word spacing, this is the CSS for it. They both take numerical values, so you can be like -1, -1 pixel, so smoosh things by 1 pixel or add 1 pixel here, or just normal, which is the default. There's sadly no property for controlling the figure weights, so the different tabular weights for numerical data. For now, I recommend using Georgia for setting text, if you're working with a, with a typeface. If you want to work with something that has, by default, old-style figures, which is the ones that dip up and below the line, which you should use in setting full bodies of text. There are other typefaces out there that will have both in them, and this is up to you if you want to either select through the font licensing service, no, this text is for, my main copy, I want to make sure to not ever use tabular numerals, and you just untick the tabular numerals one, and it'll render it in the ones that you want. There is possibly a CSS3 property that will control this, which would be awesome. Font size, well, sizes, pretty much. Takes numerical and descriptive values. Most user agents have a default, thank you, of 16 pixels. This is important because I recommend resetting this. Because remember, not all different user agents will have a default of 16 pixels. Some will have 18, some will have 14, which can give you inconsistent styling and sizing across your web pages. I recommend sizing font on your web page in relative terms. This might seem like a pain in the ass at first. Wrapping your head around it is a bit horrible at first, but it is awesome and pays off. So I'll cover that just at the end of this. So you either want to size it in ends or in percentage terms, so they're relative. So why would you want to do this? Okay, so I recommend personally using ems rather than percentages. An M is basically a relative term, best thought of as a box, and it's relative to the point size of a specific font at a specific size. And don't think of it as a box that surrounds the character entirely, like characters can break out of it. It's a bit hard to get your head around, but if you come from the printing world, you'll understand it, and if you want to do web stuff, you don't really need to understand it too much, you just need to understand how it's relative. So, for example, 1M at a 12-point typeface is 12 points. Why do you want to do this? Some users don't support font resizing up and down, cough IE, and JavaScript-based widgets that resize text does not equal accessibility. And furthermore, many devices and user agents are not the ones that you think your users might use. You should never guess what browser your user will use, because they will probably surprise you. People might use a mobile browser of some kind. And remember that font sizes are inherited from parents to children in your HTML, XHTML. And to calculate what one pixel is in ems, you multiply the desired font size in pixels. So 1 divided by the parent font size multiplied by the one that you actually want. So if your default is, as an example, actually I'll run through the 65.5% trick. This makes stuff a lot easier. So as an example, you have a paragraph element. You want that as 80% of the size of a block quote element, which is a quotation element. But block quotes are full quotes, and you might have different elements within your block quote, like paragraphs or lists. So 80% of 16 pixels is 12.8. So the paragraph and the block quote elements will be that size. But what happens when we put a paragraph element in a block quote element? It'll be 80% of 80%. So you get down to 10.42, which becomes complicated, and you're like wondering, why is my stuff smaller than it really is? To fix that, this awesome guy called Richard Rudder wrote an article, used a trick on how he fixes many of his problems, which is essentially browsers have common default sizes of 16 pixels, and thus if you set your body size to 62.5%, that makes it 10, which is a base unit of 10, which makes maths much easier. And from here on, all calculations are simpler, because for a direct descendants of the body, remember that parents, children of children will still inherit, but anything directly as a descendant of the body will be 1.2 is 12, 8 is 0.8, and so forth. So it's all relative and all nice. To find an element's font size in absolute terms, you can use a variety of extensions and and options and dialogues in your browser. This is the one that I use in Firefox. And I'll leave it at that, because I think you guys might have a few more questions. All of this is in the presentation. This is extra stuff to make things pretty, and yeah, I'll leave it here. So grab the slides, I'll put it up on Twitter later on. Thank you. One question? Okay. One question. If you have any other questions, see me outside afterwards. I'll be around. Yes.
Great presentation. Just wondering, the web's come a long way, I guess, with browser support for fonts, as you were demonstrating. Can you use any of those techniques in regards to email marketing? I'm always a bit challenged to work out how to use non-standard fonts in an email and get good support.
So email clients will traditionally use a user agent background. Outlook will use Internet Explorers. Mail will use WebKit and Safaris, essentially. As far as I know, I haven't had delved much into it, but as far as I know, they operate just like the user agents themselves that are available on the systems do. So they operate in exactly the same way. You can apply CSS. The only thing is you can't reference style sheets. Sorry. You can't be like, by the way, here's my web page, and external to this is my style sheet. It all has to be in the one email, in the one HTML page. So just like in an email that you get, which has got stylized stuff in it, And, you know, a good email client will be like, hey, this is an email. It's got HTML in it. Do you want to open it? By the way, this could be a security risk. Yes, okay, fine. And then it'll have like a, there's images in this email, in this HTML page that you've grabbed via email. Do you want to load the images? And you click load images, and it will contact the web server that have referenced in the HTML and will load the images in. And I would assume by that same logic, that web fonts would be applied exactly the same way, provided that the browser engine that the email client is using supports it. I don't know how web font hosting and licensing services would realize that the user agent that you're using is a particular user agent, because as far as I know, Outlook will be like, hi, I'm Outlook, blah, blah, blah. And I'm not sure, I would guess so, I'm not sure though, if like Typekit has realized and gone, okay, it obviously uses Internet Explorer's rendering engine, but it identifies itself as Outlook. Does that mean I give it blah? So I would be hesitant to use it, because just like images, it's external data that needs to be loaded, and you'll have this giant flash of your plain text, and you click load, which the user has to do anyway. It would be a security risk and, in my opinion, insane to do it otherwise, because it's a huge security gap. To then load that data, which means it needs to download like 50 KB of data or something, and then restyle your page. So I think you can do pretty things with email marketing. I would be hesitant to really put web fonts in there. But then again, you know, different companies will be like, I really want my corporate font in there, and they can't be convinced otherwise. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. For more materials from WebDirections events, please visit webdirections.org.